Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage's completely online process lets you get a custom mortgage solution wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Oklahoma stands out when it comes to public education, and not in a good way lately. The state has been cutting school budgets again and again, the deepest cuts in funding in the country. Now it's to the bone. A third of its schools have had to cut back to a four-day week. A third of its schools. Teachers are moving out. Student performance among the lowest in the country. On November 8th, Oklahoma voters said no to a rescue measure. What's going on? On Point will be heading out on a national listening tour in the new year, but we are impatient to get started. We've got a conservative reformer heading in as the new federal education secretary, and there's Oklahoma. This hour, On Point Education, this country, and the Oklahoma story. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. How low can a state go on school funding and still educate its kids? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. There was a big battle over whether or not to add just a little to the revenue for the schools. Earlier this year, Oklahoma University President, former U.S. Senator and Governor of Oklahoma David Boren spoke about the need to pass ballot question 779 after delivering the signed petition to launch the initiative.
Enough is enough. We don't want our state to be first in the nation in cuts to education since 2008. We don't want our nation to spend the least amount of all the states to educate our children, spending per pupil. Enough is enough. We're better than that in Oklahoma. That's not who we are in Oklahoma. That's not what we believe.
That's not who we are, said David Boren, but that is what Oklahoma voted to do on November 8th, not to bring in the extra revenue. With us today from Oklahoma City is first is Emily Wendler, education reporter for NPR affiliate KOSU. You can find her most recent stories at our website, onpointradio.org. Emily, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you, Tom.
What was the vote on November 8th? What was on the ballot when it came to funding education?
So state question 779, like you said, was a proposal to raise sales taxes 1 cent in order to fund various aspects of education.
It would have raised 1 cent on the dollar.
Yes, correct. 1 cent, 1%. Would have raised about $600 million a year, and about 60% of those funds would have gone to $5,000 raises for teachers. The other 40% would have gone to – about 20% would have gone to higher ed. Some would have gone to career tech and some programs for, like, low-income kids and early education. So it would have – but the big thing is that it would have funded these $5,000 raises for teachers. And that's because we have a huge teacher shortage in Oklahoma. Our teacher pay is some of the lowest in the nation. And so this was really like a stopgap. Like, please stop leaving. Here's $5,000. Stay. But like you said, it failed.
The voters said no. What has led to Oklahoma having the deepest cuts for the past 8 years of any state in the country? What's the environment in which this has happened, even when, I mean, it's not like performance is so great. The last number I saw was 43rd in the country. That's pretty far down the pack. Why has Oklahoma cut back so much on revenues for school?
Well, so I think funding's always been kind of low. One stat is that, you know, on average, most states spend about $11,000 per kid educating each kid. In Oklahoma, we spend a little under $8,000 educating each kid. And also, since 2008, you know, we've had 50,000 new kids since 2008, but the legislature has appropriated $100 million less. So we've got more kids, less money. So budgets have been tight for a while, but last year was really kind of the year that broke. It was like the straw that broke the camel's back. There's a couple things going on. The state cut income tax. They cut gross production tax on oil and gas. And then also oil and gas prices dropped. And this is a huge oil and gas state. And so it just kind of created this budget crisis. There were state revenue shortfalls. The state wasn't bringing in as much money as they thought they would. And so, I mean, pretty much every state agency got cut. And they're all hurting. Education was cut about $47 million last year. And so, like I said, it's been going on for a while, but last year was just bad.
Now, why were they cutting income taxes at a time when revenue was plummeting on the oil front? I mean, it seems like they were cutting off all the income. I mean, they didn't have a choice on the energy market. That went down, and that must hurt like crazy in a state like Oklahoma, you know,
yes,
fully acknowledging that. Why was that the time to cut income taxes then?
Good question. You know, lawmakers say that it's an economic driver, that we will get it back. People will put this money into the economy and we'll get the money back one way or another. But, you know, I think on average, Oklahomans got like $40 back because of this 0.25% income tax cut. So, you know, where I think it would have saved us, I think overall it would have generated about $150 million. So, you know, and some legislators said like, oh, it's just a drop in the bucket, but it would have helped.
Yeah. And now we've got, as you said, a kind of, I'm reading here, what looks like a teacher exodus, leaving the field or leaving the state. Mm-hmm. They haven't had a raise in how many years? A long time.
Not a state raise in 8 years.
That's a long time. And you've got leading figures. We heard David Boren there saying this is not who we are. But when it came to 1 cent more sales tax on the dollar, and we get everything is a tax and every tax can be felt as a burden. But Oklahomans said no to that. What was the argument? I guess we get the idea, the argument for. What was the argument against?
Well, a lot of people just didn't like the idea of using a sales tax to fund education. They said legislators needed to fund education through their
with what?
Revenue.
With what?
Yeah, and that's the counter argument, is that, you know, this was a way to surpass the legislature. This was a way to get around the legislature to, you know, because yes, exactly. I mean, I have teachers saying like, okay, they saw it as the only chance. You know, this was the only chance they were going to get a raise because the legislature doesn't really have any money. We had a budget shortfall. We had a $1.3 billion budget shortfall last year. I think it's projected to be about $400 million-ish this next coming legislative session. So, I mean, good question. With what? I mean, there's ideas floating around. There's one senator has already proposed a plan for $10,000 raises for teachers. They need new revenue.
And they don't have it. They haven't found it. And the voters said no to this one. And meanwhile, and this is what got our attention, you have so many schools in Oklahoma now who have just cut back to a four-day week. They just chopped a day off. Why? How many? How's that working?
I've heard between a quarter and a third. You know, and so the kids go longer days. So they go the same amount of hours. It's not like they're just chopping a day off. But they do get Friday or Monday off. And you know, I've heard mixed reviews. Some people really like it, and in some, like I said, we have a teacher shortage, and in some ways, it's kind of a solution to the teacher shortage because teachers are like, "Oh, hey, you're gonna give me a 3 day weekend? Like, sure, I'll stay and work for you."
Mm-hmm.
So, I can't really say whether it's been detrimental to students learning or if it's helped their student learning. I've heard from some superintendents that morale has improved, but there's so many other factors affecting education right now that it's really hard to determine whether the 4 day school week is helping or hurting students' learning.
Here's the Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon. Of course, Donald Trump is talking about her potentially as an interior secretary, seen as maybe a front runner there, but talking with News 9 in Oklahoma, saying that the 4 day school week is just unacceptable, bad for the state's image and bad for business, but kind of seems to hold the schools at fault, to blame.
I do think it's unacceptable for Oklahoma to have any schools that have 4 day school weeks. And so schools need to step up and look at their expenses and look at their operations and help us.
Okay, but 8 years of cuts, the deepest in the country, 27%, I think, at this point. Here's Audra Cornett. Two children in Enola schools, also a teacher, told CBS News Oklahoma's repeated cuts to schools are going to hit the state's children in the long run.
Knowing that we don't have enough money to keep the lights on and the buses running, it's just an outrage. Their whole future depends on the quality of education they receive at these young ages, and I don't see them being ready in the way that we had been able to prepare them before.
Emily Wendler is with us from right there, from NPR affiliate KOSU in Oklahoma City. what about, I mean, you got David Boren, he's head of the university, saying we can't do this. What about business leaders? Are they worried about the future of Oklahoma's economy with this level of stress on the schools and this pretty low ranking in, among states in the country for Oklahoma students and their performance?
Yeah, I think they are. And if you had actually, there's a little bit more to that clip where Mary Fallon is kind of telling schools to step up. She said that, yeah, I've spoken with some business leaders and some companies want to come here. And they say, well, why are your schools on 4-day school weeks? You know, so it is a concern to them. I guess schools need more money to not be on 4-day school weeks.
Is it the Oklahoma just doesn't have the money? Oil prices are down, gas prices are down, I should say, and so that's that? Or are they looking for new alternatives? How's the legislature responded to the failure of this initiative on November 8th?
You know, I've heard over and over again legislators say, yes, we think schools need more money. We think schools need more money. And I spoke with Representative Earl Sears. He's the chair of the House Appropriations and Budget Committee, and he says that they're kind of reviewing some of the tax cuts that they give oil and gas companies. They're looking into – there's another solution to – so State Question 779 would have raised the sales tax. That failed. But another proposed solution is to impose a sales tax on things that are currently not do not have a sales tax. So they're looking for ways to increase revenue. Nothing's solid. Nothing's an actual plan. But they're looking. And Senator David Holt is the senator who's proposed a $10,000 pay raise. One of his solutions is to consolidate school districts. We do have a high number of school districts. It's debatable as to whether that would save a lot of money. He thinks it will. And so, you know, he's hoping if we consolidate school districts, we'll get some money that way. But, you know, teachers in response to this say, why can't you just help us? Why do you have to hurt us to help us?
And meanwhile, you're reporting you've got teachers flooding out of the system, flooding out maybe of the state.
Yes.
Emily Wendler is education reporter with NPR affiliate KOSU in Oklahoma City. Emily, thank you very much for being with us today. We're going to dive on in here.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the struggling schools of Oklahoma and their lessons for education right across the country. You can join us this hour. You're hearing the Oklahoma story here. On November 8th, they said no to a 1 cent on the dollar increase in the sales tax there that would have gone to schools. Schools that have had the deepest cuts in revenue from the state of any schools in the country over the last 8 years. Teachers headed out. A lot of schools cutting back to 4-day weeks. Many Oklahomans, and some writing to us right here, Aileen writes from Oklahoma. She says, we didn't vote no for education or teachers. We voted no to a temporary Band-Aid. Writing to us here on Twitter, Governor Mary Fallon needs to step up, do what's needed. But energy revenues have fallen off. They're in a pinch. Students and schools paying the price. You can join us this hour. How low can a state go on school funding and still educate its citizens, its children, educate them for this century? What do you make of the Oklahoma story? 4-day school weeks, teachers leaving, empty cupboards there. When a state's main revenue source, in this case energy, shrivels, what should a state do for the kids? Is that the time to step up? Oklahomans, what is happening here? Here's a TV ad that ran against the ballot question that would have brought on more revenue for the schools. This was a coalition against called Oklahoma Deserves Better.
They call tax bill 779 an education tax. Actually, it's a slush fund for school administrators, and less than half of the tax will pay teachers. Tax bill 779 will give Oklahoma the highest sales tax rate in America, and that means less local shopping, costing jobs, and hurting city services like police and fire.
Okay, maybe, but what are you going to do? I mean, the schools are paying a price. Vice News went out, airs on HBO. They ran a segment last month looking at one district in Oklahoma, the Noble School District. And here's Principal Nathan Gray explaining why the elementary schools that he runs, like many others in the state, had to cut back to a 4-day school week.
Obviously, it's not what we wanted. It wasn't even something we were looking at. Basically, what happened is, I think December we got a funding cut. January we got one. February we got one. March we got one. And so it was basically an outcoming decision of, we're bleeding. How are we going to make it stop? You have to survive. And this was our best way to survive.
surviving on that four-day week. Energy, gas prices down, that's hurt revenues. Income taxes also cut, though. Other states within that, Kansas and others, North Carolina, big cutbacks in school spending. We'll look at that, but we want to understand this story. With us now from Oklahoma City is Mickey Dolenz. He was just elected Oklahoma State Representative from District 93, South Oklahoma City. Formerly a teacher at U.S. Grant High School in Oklahoma City, he was one of a couple hundred teachers laid off in 2016. In his district alone, there were over 800 teachers laid off statewide in Oklahoma last year. He won that race and joins us from Oklahoma City. Mickey Dolenz, thank you for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Mickey, what has happened here? We're going to talk with Frank Keating in a moment, former governor of Oklahoma. He's got a view on this. What's your take on what's going on with Oklahoma's funding for its schools?
Well, no doubt education in Oklahoma is in a crisis right now. And when it comes to State Question 779, I think it's important to understand that the failure of State Question 779, or the penny sales tax, wasn't a vote against teacher raises. It's simply the public saying, as legislators, it's your job to fund core services such as education. And the fact that this is even a state question is a failure on the state legislature. What it all comes down to is failed tax policy.
Is the legislature hiding a wad of money somewhere that could be going to the schools? I mean, they're saying, we've got empty coffers, you're running huge deficits.
Well, we're simply not creating revenue. We cannot tax cut our way to prosperity, and I have many Republican friends across the aisle who agree. The question is, which of us will step up as statesmen and make decisions based on the best interest of the people instead of pandering for votes and always thinking about our upcoming elections?
You were right in there teaching in this environment. What has it meant for the schools, for the education of Oklahoma's children, these cutbacks?
Well, no doubt. At this time last year, I was actually a teacher, like you said, at a school in which now I represent. I've seen many of my colleagues go to different states, Arkansas, Colorado, Texas. And when I was laid off, I was actually recruited to go to Dallas ISD weekly for a $20,000 pay increase. I'm a fifth-generation Oklahoman. I have deep roots here, so leaving wasn't an option for me. But I've seen it happen far too many times. We're losing a lot of great teachers in Oklahoma. And my goal is to ensure that we quit losing teachers and we retain the ones we have and we can recruit high-quality teachers out of our colleges and universities.
49th in the country in teaching wages, I understand.
Right, yeah, 49th in the nation in teacher pay and first in the nation for the largest cuts to public education.
Frank Keating joins us in just a moment. Let's go to our callers there from Oklahoma, I guess. Logan in Oklahoma City. Thank you for calling, Logan. What do you see there?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was an educator back in 2008, and I left Oklahoma to go get further education, and I just returned to the state this year. I had to vote no on question 779 because I could not support a regressive tax on the poor and the working class, which are the dominant people in our state, especially the educators, to pay more for the basic needs of their lives in order to continue supporting education, which is also a basic need. The conservative policies of Oklahoma, I understand conservative politics, but there's a point where you have to have money to pay for your basic needs. And our state has stripped that money away so much that we cannot pay for our basic needs.
Where should it come from? You know, natural gas prices are way down. Oklahoma's been hurt by that. You don't want a sales tax because it's regressive. Everybody understands that. But where would it come from, Logan, the money?
Well, I mean, you know, hindsight is 20/20. You wish that it would have come from the time that we were having an oil and natural gas boom over the last, you know, 5 or 10 years, that we would have had taxes and kept a rainy day fund for the time that we would go into the recession like we have now. But there are plenty of wealthy people. There are plenty of wealthy corporations that could pay more to support an education system to improve it. And there can also be high administrative cuts when you have over 270 school superintendents in the state for 70 counties. There is a lot of waste in administration that could be cut in order to go back into the public schools and pay the teachers to do the work of teaching.
So no thanks to this, but I can hear you want more for the schools and for education. Logan, I appreciate your call from Oklahoma. Mickey Dolenz, please stand by. I want to bring Frank Keating in, if I may, former governor of Oklahoma, 95 to 2003, former assistant secretary of the Treasury, later associate attorney general in the Reagan administration, worked at HUD as well in Washington. He's been around Oklahoma and Washington, joins us today. He's with the law firm Holland & Knight now, joins us from Oklahoma City. Frank Keating, thank you very much for being here.
No, it's my pleasure.
I mean, we're looking from afar, so we're trying to learn from you all what's going on. It looks pretty rough to have such deep cuts year after year, teachers bailing out, four-day school weeks, and the voters saying no to this, okay, maybe they don't want a sales tax. What's going on, Frank?
Well, it is rough, and it is unacceptable.
I know when I was governor, we provided the teachers the largest salary increase to date. I'm a Republican. Mm-hmm. The House and Senate were overwhelmingly Democrat.
Yep.
But we did charter schools, choice, education, rigor, 3 years of math, 4 years of English, science, and history. The Oklahoma School of Science and Math, during my 8 years, which was not that long ago, was number one or number two. That's a public school in ACT scores in the United States. That's the companion to SAT. What's happened is, yes, energy has been a factor, but energy is not by any means a majority of the Oklahoma state income. What happened was, and our caller, I think, hit it right on the nail, that we have invested in other things. For example, we have a wind tax credit that's refundable that we have to pay out of the Treasury. We get nothing for it, some upwards of $500 million over the next number of years.
Wind, like alternative energy, nothing. Wind. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, this is a refundable tax credit that goes to out of state and does not go into the state. None of this wind power is used in Oklahoma. Well, the wonderful thing, I think, about our new legislator on the line is that in a bipartisan way, and someone who is laid off as a teacher, I think, has an authoritative voice, to sit down, Republicans, Democrats, and resolve this. It is not difficult to do. We cannot afford to lose good teachers. It is disgraceful that we couldn't put together a $5,000 salary increase during the legislative session. But what was proposed, and I think that ad hit it also right on the nail, what was proposed is to make us the number one sales tax state in the union, try to sell the state to outside business interests with that statistic. And secondly, it was less than 40% of the money would actually go to teacher salaries. The other went to the black hole of public school administrators, the black hole of higher education administrators, and even career tech, vocational technical education, that has its own funding source. So the answer, quite truthfully, is to look at the service sales tax. We have $8 billion a year of service transactions that are not taxed. We could tax the tattoo parlors, for example, you know, tax a few people sufficient to permit us to give a $10,000 raise to teachers. We want to keep the good teachers at home, but there is no reason to have hundreds and hundreds of school districts. 60% of the money doesn't go to teachers. It goes to administrators. We have ought to have one district per county, 77 counties, 77 school districts, and have the highest paid people be master teachers, demand rigor and excellence from teachers, and you'll get it.
But frankly, Governor
so
Keating, meanwhile,
not much about it.
Yeah, but meanwhile, what, I mean, for civic leaders in Oklahoma, when you've got, you know, so many schools now with 4 day weeks there, and on the fifth day, kids like playing basketball at the Y or what, you know, not sitting down to learn in a competitive global economy like we're in now. Donald Trump may want to rein that in some, but you know it's still going to be global. I mean, what are civic leaders thinking in Oklahoma to let these cuts go year after year and this scene unfold in your state?
The legislature let us down. The legislature should have addressed this and did not. The reality is the business community was overwhelmingly against this Boren sales tax proposal because they felt correctly, I think, if you get a $5,000 salary increase in the Constitution, no one is going to do anything else. They'll say it's been taken care of. We'll move on to Plan B. But $5,000 is not enough. You know, we
after
need
8 years
reform,
of no increase.
I think that's going to happen in January.
Yeah. We'll see. Mara is calling from Norman, Oklahoma. Frank Keating, Mickey Dolenz, please stand by. Mara, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for this important conversation.
Sure.
I have two little kids in elementary school in Oklahoma. And I'm a teacher at the flagship university at OU, where
yes.
our President Boren works.
Yes.
I wanted to say two things. One is that I think more conversation has to happen around taxing the 1%. I think it's true there is a lot of wealth in the state, but there's talk about service tax and about regressive taxes. Where's the tax on those that are living in the fancy mansions out there?
Okay.
Right.
My other point is that I moved here from Newton, Massachusetts, and it's hard for me to hear you talk about way out there. We have people on the ground in Oklahoma. We're not in the Philippines. We're still part of America. And I want to keep hearing that connection.
We're right here on the phone with you, Mara. We're acknowledging that 100% here, and that's why we care.
Yes, and that's why I love your show. That's why we follow it so carefully. We really respect the work that you're doing.
Mara, I appreciate your call. Mickey, what about it? Is this an income tax problem? Is that where the eye should be? I mean, we've seen states, Kansas with a very conservative approach, Oklahoma cutting income tax. Is that the problem? And what about Frank Keating's, Governor Keating's assertion that this is about administrative bloat in the Oklahoma education system?
Well, to tackle the consolidation of school districts, it's a great talking point, right? Oklahoma has 77 counties, 515 school districts in Oklahoma. Consolidating administration could possibly save a little money, but remember, superintendents in many rural districts are also principals, coaches, teachers, bus drivers, janitors. The quality administration are vital to the education system, just as a good CEO is to their company. And also, I wanted to also echo what the previous caller before Mara said, Logan, you know, when it comes to energy and progressive taxes. I was working in Oklahoma and in the Oklahoma oil fields as a roughneck when oil was actually over $100 a barrel.
Yep.
And guess what? We were still facing revenue shortfalls. Yes, right now, currently, a downturn in oil is hurting revenue, but so is all the corporate tax cuts, credits, and exemptions we give away. We actually give away a third of our revenue every year, which equals over $1 billion. And then to make up for a regressive tax, which the penny sales tax would have been, we try to replace it with the service taxes, which are just as regressive. You're going to be taxing people for services like water, sewage, streaming videos like Netflix, doctor visits, stuff like that. So it's just as regressive. We have to come up with real revenue that is progressive and it doesn't put the burden on the working class Oklahomans.
What about the 1%? Our caller points there and says, go bring get the income tax to work on those who live in the big mansions to educate the students, the children of Oklahoma.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a solution. I know that right now in the House there are 75 Republicans and 26 Democrats. In the Senate there are 42 Republicans, 6 Democrats, and, of course, our governor is Republican. So I hope that we can come to a common-sense solution this session to address the problems that we're facing in Oklahoma. And it's not just education. Let's not forget that the Oklahoma Highway Patrol just put a limit on their troopers that they can only drive 100 miles a day in their patrol cars. Now we're jeopardizing public safety because of budget cuts. Where does it end?
Well, let's go to Matthew in Austin, Texas. Matthew, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. This is Matt. And so I've got a little bit of a different view here, and it's not specifically Oklahoma, but nationwide. What do you think the future of public school would be in the next 5-10 years with the rise of things like MOOCs, which are massively online free courses with public education?
You mean are you even going to have schools out there just do it all digitally? I don't know. Governor Keating, Is this ideological? Is this an urge to, you know, cut taxation? Income tax has been cut in Oklahoma. We've seen Kansas and other states go down this road and then run into problems. Is this coming back to bite Oklahoma's children?
Well, I think some of it is ideological. Obviously, we Republicans feel that it makes more sense to have you and me keep our income and create wealth and an economy ourselves as opposed to have government redistributed, but by far the largest expenditure of Oklahoma is public education. That's extremely important, but it's misallocated. The reality is, I remember some years ago I went out to meet the cast of a movie that was being made here. We met at the school. There was a rectangular building. There was an elementary school on one side. There was a middle school and a high school. There were three principals and one superintendent and their staffs. Roughly 80% of the money raised in that particular district went to administration. Well, that's absurd. We need reform. And I think this crisis will, with Mickey's help and others, bring everybody together in January when the legislature comes back to address the crisis of teacher salaries and the crisis of losing excellent teachers to other states. But I have no sympathy for the bureaucrats. I'm really quite surprised that the School Board Association and the teachers embrace all of this silliness. There's no reason why we have to have 500-plus school districts. There's no reason why we have to spend roughly 60% of our money on administration, a lot more than that in some districts. It should go to teachers and excellence and rigor in the classroom. And that's why the governor and I have talked about this, the current governor, Mary Fallon. And now that the Boren proposal has failed, now everybody realizes they have to do something. And hopefully, tax policy, rigor, closing non-performing schools, consolidation of districts, and giving the most money to teachers will occur. But it takes leadership, and it takes courage, and hopefully that'll happen.
Trouble in Oklahoma on the schools front. We've got a new education secretary headed in, most likely in Washington, Betsy DeVos. We'll look at that in a moment. Former governor of Oklahoma, Frank Keating, thank you very much for joining us today. Good luck there.
Thank you so much.
And Mickey Dolenz, laid off. Now he's a state rep in Oklahoma. Mickey, make it work. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Governor Keating.
Listeners, we'll come right back and look nationally. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings home financing into the 21st century with a completely online process that's fast, easy, and convenient. Using a phone or tablet, you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs without having to dig through piles of paperwork. It takes just a few minutes to get a custom mortgage solution on your terms, wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We've been talking this hour about the struggling schools of Oklahoma and their lessons for education right across the country as a new education secretary, Betsy DeVos, is headed for top post in Washington, nominated by Donald Trump for that cabinet seat. You can join us this hour. What are you hearing the Oklahoma story? And are you seeing a resource pinch in your schools, your state's education support? Is this about funding? Is it about waste? Is the answer school choice, school privatization, vouchers? And what do you see coming with Education Secretary in Waiting, Betsy DeVos? Let's take a bigger view on all this now. Bruce Baker joins us. He's professor of education at Rutgers University in New Jersey. Research focuses on the relationship between funding, performance, and equity in public schools right across the country. Bruce Baker, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. Good to be here.
And with us from Washington is Michael J. Petrilli, president of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute's Conservative Education Reform Think Tank, editor of Education for Upward Mobility. Michael Petrilli, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks, Tom. Great to be here.
Bruce Baker, you can hear the anguish coming out of Oklahoma. The voters went against this proposition to get some more money in there, but even the former Republican governor, Frank Keating, says we've got a crisis here. What do you hear in the story of what's going on there and in other states where you're seeing significant cuts? I mean, Oklahoma's had the biggest cuts in recent years, but you've got other states right in there, Kentucky, Kansas, Arizona. What do you hear in this story, Bruce?
Well, I think what makes it critical in Oklahoma is that Oklahoma is a state that has persistently underfunded education for decades. And as a result, along with that, it's seen rather anemic growth in various outcome measures. So when you start slashing away at a system that is already operating at bare bones, that has among the least competitive teacher wages in the country and only modest staffing ratios, you end up with a system that's in crisis, even compared to the neighbors of Oklahoma. I've studied Kansas and Texas extensively, and of course, Kansas has had similar dramatic cutbacks in their spending, but as a result of decades of prior judicial pressure on the system under the state constitution, Kansas was in much better position by 2007-2008 than Oklahoma to be able to bear the brunt of those cuts. Now, Kansas schools are also hurting, and so too are many Texas schools, but relative to Oklahoma, they're much better off. When you cut a system that is in better position to begin with, it just doesn't hurt
Do you see this as a result of economic pressure? We went through a recession. They had an energy bust. They've got one in Oklahoma. Or is this ideological? I mean, when I look here at the five of the eight states with the deepest cuts to education, also cut income taxes, Oklahoma, Kansas, Arizona, Wisconsin, North Carolina. Now, you can say, well, that's to jumpstart the economy, but that may or may not work. Is this ideological, or is it just not enough cash in the kitty, Bruce?
Well, it certainly hasn't worked in Kansas, as another example. And there have been a lot of critiques using Kansas as a national example of how the repeated and dramatic cuts to income taxes really have not resulted in the types of state revenue gains that one would expect from the conservative ideology behind those tax cuts. So I think a well balanced education system has to be supported by a balanced revenue stream, and we have to really step back and look at the balance of income, sales, and property taxes that go into that. And what we've reached a point, you know, at the front end of the economic downturn, revenues dried up, and in particular, income tax revenues dried up quickest, deepest, and there were huge shortfalls in state budgets. A number of states took the approach that they were going to cut the income taxes to try to create the rebound. That didn't work. But we've also reached a point where there's a broader, and I think this even crosses the aisles in state legislatures, there's this broader idea that there's never a good time to raise taxes. That, well, the economy's bad, we can't raise taxes, we'll only make it worse. Well, the economy's starting to rebound. If we raise taxes, we might flatten that out. So we've reached a point where there's become almost a broad public acceptance that there's never a good time to raise taxes, even though the provision of equitable and adequate public services like education rely on having a substantial and balanced flow of revenues across income, sales, and property taxes.
Michael Petrilli, what do you see going on here? Is there a level below which a state just can't go and say, we're committed to educating our children?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you look at Oklahoma, I think they have gone below that level. You know, so I don't think even many of us on the right aren't going to defend what's happened in Oklahoma, maybe in Kansas. I think what's important for your listeners to know, though, mm-hmm. is that those states are real outliers. You know, that most states, the big picture for decades has been increased spending in education because the public views this as a high priority. You do see dips during recessions, at least at the state level. But if you actually look at the spending happening in the schools because of local property taxes, mm-hmm. It still goes up during most recessions. Now, this latest recession was a particularly bad one, and there were some states where we have seen actual declines that are now rebounding. But look, you can't get the job done with no money. You can't get the job done if you're losing teachers to other states. And so there is a level below which you just can't go.
Let's get one more call from Oklahoma, and then we'll look elsewhere around the nation as well. Lissa in Oklahoma City. Thank you for calling, Lissa.
Thank you, Tom. I'm a huge fan of yours. Thanks for bringing a very intelligent dialogue to this severe matter. I am a financial advisor. My family's been in Oklahoma since the land run. I work specifically with teachers. So I see the devastation that the inaction causes. We're extremely frustrated by the perpetual cuts and lack of funding from our legislature. And although, President Warren's plan did not pass, at least he tried. And I think that the only way we're going to solve this issue instead of kicking the can down the street for yet another year is to be able to hold everyone accountable and keep in a very simplistic format the votes and progress of trying to fund the teachers.
Lissa, is it economic? You're a financial advisor. Is there just simply an economic crunch here, or is this ideological? People, you know, sticking to some kind of ideological view of the world while the students get choked off?
I would very much disagree with this ideologically, because the people of Oklahoma are some of the most compassionate people. Mm. I think it's the lack of information and the disinformation in which we receive from a very red state and for the lack of accountability that our legislatures seem to have.
Lissa, I appreciate your call. Michael, what's the way out of this? And we acknowledge your point that this is in a special set of states where the funding is low and you've got low performance in many of them as well. Is it state by state? We've got Betsy DeVos coming in most likely here as education secretary. Is it charter schools? Is it vouchers? Is it privatization? What's the way out when you're stuck down here?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think that the public schools need to be able to make the case that the extra money is going to lead to better results. And in a lot of places, they just haven't been able to make that case. You know, and I think, of course, I'm biased. I am someone who strongly mm-hmm. supports education reform, but I think embracing reform is an important part of the picture. You've got to be able to tell people, look, we are willing to compete for example, against public charter schools. We're willing to do things differently. You know, this money isn't going to just evaporate into the bureaucracy. And we are going to commit to getting better results if you give us more money. And that is not the kind of message that we've tended to hear from most education groups. They just plead poverty and say, you know, just give us more money.
I get that. But I do see, like, I'm looking at Arizona, 48th in funding in the country, 42nd in performance. Nevada, 46th in funding, 50th, bottom of the heap in performance. Oklahoma, 44th in funding, 43rd in performance. It sounds like a link to me. Now, some do much better. Utah, 47th in funding, 16th in performance. They're on to something there. But you've got a lot of states where it looks like a pretty direct relation.
Well, let's be very careful with that, Tom.
Okay.
That relationship is mostly about the demographics in those states. You are pointing to some very poor states, and we know that student achievement is very closely related to socioeconomics. So in other words, poor kids tend to score worse on achievement tests.
Okay.
We've been trying to break that link, but that is still a very strong relationship. So what we have is that we've got some very poor states. They tend to be red states that don't have the money to spend on education. They do not spend that money in education. Utah is interesting. Why does Utah do so well?
Yeah.
Well, it probably has something to do with the demographics of Utah. That's a state where the Church of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons, are very strong. You've got an overwhelming proportion of two-parent families. You've got a lot of things happening outside the schools that are probably helping the kids perform better once they are in school. So we just have to be careful. Look, there have been a handful of studies, and Bruce probably knows them better than I, that have been able to show a link between increased spending and better outcomes. But it all depends on what you spend the money on. And unfortunately, in a lot of places, when we boost funding, it just seems to disappear. It just gets soaked up by the bureaucracy. Everybody gets a small raise. You can't tell that anything's actually changing in terms of the services and the level of instruction that kids are getting in the classroom.
Of course, you can keep saying that until the schools are just flat on their back. What next? 3-day school weeks? 2-day school weeks? We're looking
right.
at
this. And this is why I think we have to embrace both reform and also this push for higher funding. So look, you look at some charter schools in the country that are incredibly high performing, that are getting breakthrough results, especially for kids in poverty. And to me, that demonstrates that we can break this cycle. You can make the case that, hey, if you're willing to change the way the system works, if you're willing to give parents choices, if you're willing to say, you know what, we're not going to have unionized teachers in every school. You know what? We're going to give schools real autonomy.
Is that going to change Oklahoma's reality? Just
it could.
Really?
It could. Absolutely. Yeah. I think if you can tell the people in Oklahoma, look, you've got more choices, there's more accountability, and there's better results coming, I think it's easier to make the case for more funding.
That's the Betsy DeVos line, and she's very strong with it, coming in as Donald Trump's education secretary. Let's go to Chris in Belmont, Massachusetts. Chris, you're on the air. Thank you for calling. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, you're on.
Thank you. I'd just like to make the point that the federal government always seems to escape some accountability for this. So we have all this debate and this finger pointing at the local level about revenue streams, whether it be sales tax or income taxes and so forth. And yet there's all this money going out of Oklahoma as it is out of other states. And the federal government never seems to be held accountable for its responsibility for either returning that money locally so that they can fix schools and pay teachers more instead of squandering it elsewhere.
Chris, let us pick it up right there. Our time is short, but everybody talks about educating for the 21st century, and here we are. Bruce Baker, what about Washington and policy there? What it's been relative to Oklahoma and other states, and what's coming with Betsy DeVos and her big charter school push coming in under Donald Trump?
Well, I think what'll be interesting to watch there is you know, what method will be used and what effect, you know, there will be from the federal government on state policy. And we certainly saw one approach with Race to the Top under the Obama administration, which was to actually stimulate a more kind of metricized teacher evaluation system to improve teaching quality and to promote choice and charter expansion in the current administration, and that was a significant strategy of the federal government. Now, most of the federal money is actually allocated on a poverty basis through something like the Title I programming, and that, you know, it's, I'm not sure how or whether that's going to change. I'm not sure whether or not DeVos and the new administration will be able to really strongly influence state policy. The federal role in American education remains relatively small.
But she campaigned like crazy for charter schools in Michigan, where she's from. And she, you know, she's from a family. Her dad founded Amway. She's from a family kind of outside the box. Her brother, and I hadn't known this, Eric Prince, was the founder of Blackwater, the private security contractor that got so many billions in the U.S. from the U.S. government in the Middle East. But you know she's going to push for charter schools. And Michael Petrilli says that could work. That could work in a state like Oklahoma to break this logjam, this impasse. Do you believe it, Bruce?
Well, on the one hand, I actually think that her leverage within the context of Michigan was more likely to have significant effect on Michigan policy, because these are issues that are dealt with mostly in state policy context. The federal influence over state policy is relatively limited. As for Michael's argument about charter schools and money being dissipated through the blob of the public district system, whether charter schools or private vouchers or traditional public schools, the reality is that the system, to be effective, needs to have adequate resources. And in many of the cases where we look at particularly high-performing charter schools, one, they operate in contexts that fund their school systems well, in Newark, in Boston, in Washington, D.C. And when we look at the actual structure of expenditures in charter schools, one of the things that we find in general is that they actually spend more on administration than the district schools in their surroundings. They also tend to spend a lot on teachers and relative teacher salaries, given the experience and degree levels. Charter schools have not changed the structure of the delivery of education. And I also think that we've been significantly, and in particular Governor Keating, significantly overstating the amount of administrative bloat and the potential cost savings from consolidation. Charter schools have not been a major structural game changer. And in those cases where they've tried through kind of the equivalent of massive online learning, rocket ship schools, and so on, they've not done particularly well. They've done well. Charter schools have done well when they've done well by having small classes, running longer days, running longer years, doing the kinds of things that many districts and district schools would like to do if they had the resources to do so.
Change the structure. Do you see pedal to the metal coming, Michael Petrilli, on the charter school front from Secretary Betsy DeVos, if that's what it is?
Well, first of all, I think her heart is really in private school vouchers, which is about allowing especially poor kids to get scholarships to go to private schools.
Including,
I think that's
for-profit where the schools.
No. I mean, there's not that many for-profit private schools out there, but, religious schools for sure, Catholic schools. I think there'll be a big push on that. I think there'll be a lot of pushback from Congress.
Vouchers and policy and structure. And meanwhile, there's Oklahoma struggling with its problem as the nation watches and a new education secretary heads to town. We'll look a lot more at what she's going to be cooking up and where American education is going. We're grateful to the two of you for being with us today to take a look at the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. Michael J. Petrilli, president there. Thank you for joining us, Michael.
Thank you, Tom.
And Bruce Baker at Rutgers University. Thanks so much for joining us today, Bruce.
Thank you, Tom.
Tomorrow in this hour, the Rockefellers battling with ExxonMobil over the climate. They're with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.